Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn about the 2013 International Mine Countermeasure Exercise and the Minnesota National Guard's Strong Bond Program to help our service members and their spouses build the resilience needed to cope with frequent deployments. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Throughout the summer, the Minnesota Twins are recognizing Yellow Ribbon networks that support military members, veterans, and their families. What a truly fantastic recognition program that they've developed. 3 years ago, the Minnesota Twins put our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon logo in their outfield and said, "We want to thank the people who support military families," and they're doing it. Members of the Douglas County and the City of Alexandria Yellow Ribbon Network were recognized at one of the first chilly April ball games. Other networks will be recognized by the Twins. Just prior to the game, they are recognized for their unique contributions to our statewide Beyond the Yellow Ribbon effort. Thanks to the Minnesota Twins and to the more than 200 Yellow Ribbon networks throughout our great state. It is only with your support that we are able to keep the Minnesota National Guard force of nearly 14,000 strong, a competent, ready force.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Navy Captain Richard Henderson, Commander of Navy Forces Japan Headquarters. Captain Henderson, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Tom. Glad to be here.
Good to have you back, sir. Seems like the last time we had you in the studio, you changed jobs, and now you've been out on some temporary duty, and you're kind of a busy guy.
Yeah, it's never a dull moment in the reserve, so I recently took over as commander of the Naval Forces Japan Headquarters Unit, based in Navy Operations Support Center in Minneapolis, and I've been doing that since December. And I think the last time we spoke, I was over in Tokyo, so I'm racking up some frequent flyer miles, to say the least.
Frequent guest in the studio and frequent flyer miles to travel all over the world.
Three different airlines now,
sir. How long have you been in the military?
Going on 28 years now. So I'm what's called a surface warfare officer in the Navy. Served on a battleship and in the amphib Navy. Had a tour in the Civil Engineer Corps. And recently, I was the Navy's Emergency Preparedness Liaison Officer for the state of Minnesota. And then I left that to take over the Commander Naval Forces Japan Headquarters Unit. So I've been able to stay in pay and stay in Minnesota, and that's a rare thing to do as an 06.
Sounds like a long list of experiences in your 28 years in the Navy, sir.
Yes.
You're on the show today. We wanted to talk about the 2013 International Mine Countermeasure Exercise. Why does the military always have long names for everything, Captain?
I think what it is the military loves
acronyms.
Acronyms. And so if they're so long you can't pronounce them, you go to acronyms, and then everybody who walks in doesn't know what you're talking about. So that's it. The International Mine Countermeasures Exercise is tailor-made for an acronym. But that was a fun event conducted over from Bahrain in the Arabian Gulf at the Naval Central Command headquarters, also where the 5th Fleet is headquartered. And it was an exciting exercise and a chance to get a lot of countries working together to deal and counter mine-laying threats.
Now, sir, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't do this as Captain Henderson, who's the Navy Reserve Commander, Naval Forces Japan. You did it as Captain Henderson.
Nope.
Going on active duty. And did the Navy go out looking for people to take this assignment to help with this exercise? Is that how that worked?
What the heck? It's join the Navy, see the world, and sometimes you got to do your own freelancing. But basically what happens is when you have exercises like this, There's a huge demand on the staffs that are already there. So they need to, bring in augmentees. So you've got to, you've got to shop around and see what's out there and put in for what looks interesting. And surprise, you suddenly get a line of funding and orders. And it could happen in a matter of, in a matter of a week. You've got to turn that around and be over there. So this one was pretty much short fuse.
So our listeners are used to hearing about National Guard units that deploy as a unit. But in the Navy and sometimes in the Air Force, they go out looking for some expertise and some people to add to an exercise. And then if you've got the time and the ability, you volunteer for that. And if you're chosen, away you go.
Yeah, that's an important point on the Navy, being not, in ground combat operations, with the Navy and the way we fit into the modern contingencies. Most Navy reservists who participate go out as what are called individual augmentees, IAs, and that's to, fill gaps throughout the world. And that could be, Kuwait, Afghanistan, Horn of Africa, and also just reserve component like myself, we're picking up what we call, freelance events like this.
Well, I'm sure it's great for the Navy to be able to go out and pick up the reserve officers and plug them into a spot where they need some help. We're speaking with Captain Richard Henderson on Minnesota Military Radio. Captain, can you tell us a little bit about this mine countermeasure exercise? Who was involved and what was the goal?
The International Mine Countermeasures Exercise 2013 was, designed to bring a coalition of countries together to deal with a variety of mined threats and to, exercise basic branches of mine countermeasures exercise, which would be the traditional mine countermeasures, maritime infrastructure protection, and also maritime security operations. But just as important is to bring together a coalition of countries to work together through, different languages, militaries that might operate a little bit differently and bring you all together and, achieve that ever elusive goal in the military of unity of effort, unity of command. And I think that's where the real success is the fact that you're working together. And, it's important to emphasize that you're not looking at any specific country out there as a threat, or any threat in particular. It's just the fact that there could be a threat, and that threat needs to be dealt with when you're talking about strategic choke points such as the Strait of Hormuz.
So this was an opportunity for the coalition to get together and discover what communications problems they may have and discover what kind of different capabilities that each other had. And I understand there's a lot of different types of mines could be put out there.
It could be a poor man's way to create a lot of havoc because, the technology and the types get more and more, accessible to different groups. The technology is always changing. And so it's a chance to get out there and operate and also, test out some different gear in mine countermeasures. So if you look at, the International Mine Countermeasures Exercise, we're really looking at three different dimensions of mine warfare, being the air, the surface, and the underwater. And so, with air, you're looking at, working with helos for sweeps. Then there's, the surface mine countermeasures, the traditional type that, goes back to World War I, where you, do surface sweeps and, dealing with the threat from the surface. But we're, there's been some interesting technological changes is with the underwater mine countermeasures, such as with unmanned underwater vehicles. And so you do get an opportunity to test out new gear and new techniques, but it really comes down to getting everybody together and to be able to operate. But I also want to emphasize that, we had significant civilian participation in that, because we seem to forget in the military world it's really all about keeping civilian shipping moving in a very strategic, that's where the real impact is if you were, cut off a choke point like that, the amount of shipping that's going through that. So how do you get the industry to work with you and be a participant. So part of the exercise was to actually have a symposium with participants from the civilian industry, including shipping.
Captain, you don't read much about mines today. At least I haven't seen much over the last over some years. So this exercise was in the event that some nation, some group decided to mine certain areas of international water, and how do we respond to it?
Exactly. I mean, the threat could literally come anywhere, and it can become quickly and with no notice. So that's why they're important not to emphasize any particular country that's doing this, because, you know, it could be, you know, any country could potentially get the capability to do this. And it's, you know, it's not just the Strait of Hormuz. You've got strategic shipping points throughout the world, you know, including such as the, you know, the Straits of Malacca, where, you know, so much of this global maritime commerce channels through that. And, you know, just a few mines could in theory shut the whole thing off. I mean, you could have, you know, a strategic choke point could have 50 ships per day backing up and having to go to anchorage if, you know, the strait is mined.
That could cause quite a mess. Captain, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Lieutenant Commander Jason Woodbury. We've been speaking to Navy Captain Richard Henderson on Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I've been joined today by Navy Captain Richard Henderson, and we've been talking about the 2013 International Mine Countermeasure Exercise. And, Captain, we're going to be joined in a moment by Lieutenant Commander Jason Woodbury, but you were telling me that for this particular assignment, I'm assuming it was a matter of weeks or a month or something, it was like temporary duty? That's the old word we used to use 40 years ago.
It's all the same. I think the term they call now is ADT. Additional training. It's all the same, you know, and just a new name, different place.
So you were out involved with the other coalition parties and going through the exercise of having those partners work together and solve communications problems and experience their capabilities and try to figure out a working plan for if something happens, we know we can go out and deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. When you get together and work at an exercise, you, you know, come up with, just like the private sector does, come, you know, you discover business rules, ways you need to operate. And it's, again, it's not so much the mine countermeasures, it's getting together and just working with, you know, coalition partners and, you know, of interest to the, you know, state of Minnesota. We, you know, we had officers from Norway and Denmark participating. I got a chance to work with them. So, you know, you find most countries' English is pretty good. And after working together, you know, you start really, you don't even notice that they're in a different uniform. You kind of get with the program, you fall in and figure out what you need to do. And it's just a matter of, you know, going through that, what they call that battle rhythm each day of, you know, how to exercise that, you know, exercise the staff and achieve what I was talking about before, that, that unity, all elusive unity of effort. So, yeah, it was a good opportunity.
Captain, we've got another U.S. Navy Reserve officer, Lieutenant Commander Jason Woodbury, on the line all the way from Bahrain. Lieutenant Commander, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, sir. It's good to be here.
Jason, how are you? It's Rich Henderson.
I'm doing well, Captain. How are you?
Good. I got off the plane from that 90-degree-plus heat and got here at 55 degrees, and it felt good.
Oh, that sounds great. I miss it.
Lieutenant Commander, can you tell us a little bit, how long have you been in the Navy? And I understand you were you had 8 years active duty on submarines.
Yes, sir, that's right. I've been in the Navy total for about 15 years, and nine of it now was active duty, and then in the reserves for six. I was on a USS Michigan, a ballistic missile sub out of Bangor, Washington, and then I did shore tours in Japan. I did 2 years over at Submarine Group 7 in Japan, and then I'm in Bahrain right now, and this is my second time here. I did a year active duty on the submarine staff here as well.
Now, can you tell us this current assignment? How did you land that, sir?
Well, that was a fun little gift. This is what they call an involuntary mobilization. So, I am part of Captain Henderson's reserve unit there in Minneapolis. I live in St. Paul. And I was just going about my normal business, doing my participation with the Navy Reserves, and I got, sometimes they call it tagged, I got recalled to active duty for this assignment, which is something that, you know, that's what the reserves exist for. Some of the assignments that come through, most of the assignments that, like the captain was talking about, they're voluntary. You if you want to go participate in something, you want to further your training, you can volunteer and go on. But some of the assignments are involuntary, where they it's like getting called up off the bench.
So they pulled you away from the St. Paul Fire Department and sent you to Bahrain.
That's right. Yep.
Now, Jason was smart about this because he saw that he was tagged for mobilization, and he was proactive and went out and said, "Okay, what, where would be a good place to operate? Take, you know, what can I do to dictate my fate rather than wait for, you know, the set of orders that come in?" So I think it's worked out pretty well for him.
Yes, sir. It sure has.
Commander, can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Bahrain?
So what I'm doing out here, I work with the small task force of people that coordinate all of the anti-terrorism and force protection efforts in and around the Bahrain's area. So there's a significant military presence in Bahrain, we've been here for a long time, almost 40 years, or over 40 years. It's the only permanent U.S. military facility in the region, and so, you know, it's a sizable. There's a number of different facilities on the island, and my group sort of looks at and develops plans for protection, just force protection, so against the non-specific terrorist threat. You look at events in our history like the Cobar Towers and the USS Cole and the 9/11, and we try and evaluate potential vulnerabilities, see where we might need extra defenses or surveillance, and, you know, take care of that.
That's I look at that as a really a tough, demanding assignment, and it, you know, it's in a fairly heavy urban area, and you know, it's a lot of hard work that Commander Woodbury and his security teams have to work with.
So, Commander, are you stationed with other Navy personnel, or is it a mixed force?
Yes, sir. It's Navy. So we're the main base here is a Navy base. And then we have all four branches present on the island. All four branches have different representations for different facilities, but the largest presence is Navy. So it's the Navy that owns, you know, quote unquote, owns the responsibility for force protection on the island.
So hopefully everything's going well on this tour and you've got everything under control, sir.
Yes, sir. You know, things, it's a good team. We have a good relationship with the host country here. They're good friends of ours. And so, there's pretty much only so much we can do, and then we rely heavily on our friends, our Bahraini friends, for support, and they do a great job. So
probably the manning's gone down a little bit since the exercise ended.
Well, that's true. Yeah, it is great to have. We see waves of just like Captain was talking about, waves of reserve support come in and out throughout the year, and right now after everybody left, it's kind of quiet.
So were you involved in the mine countermeasure exercise as well?
No, only tangentially, only on the outside. Just any time that there's a surge in people or a surge in activity, that sort of raises our tempo of work because there's more to protect.
So, yeah, you're on, you know, you've got a actual working harbor there and a lot of vessels going in and out, so the overall level of activity goes up and, of course, increases the force protection demand, so... You know, it was a challenging time for Commander Woodbury also.
We're speaking with Captain Richard Henderson and Lieutenant Commander Jason Woodbury on Minnesota Military Radio. Commander, I'm intrigued. You said you at one point in your career you were aboard the USS Michigan.
Yes.
And I think you're probably aware the USS Minnesota is out on sea trials and is going to be commissioned later this in September. Are they the same class submarine?
No. The Minnesota is a Virginian class. It's one of the sleek, beautiful new submarines that we have. I was on USS Michigan, was commissioned in 1982, slightly older, and it's a different mission. So there's two major types of submarines in U.S. inventory. One, like Minnesota, is a fast attack. So it's a little smaller. It's sleek, fast, nimble. And then the Ohio class is the are the ballistic missile submarines. They're like the you ever seen the movie Hunt for Red October?
Right, we have, sir.
It's like the Red October. It's like the big they carry nuclear missiles on them.
Jason, it sounds like you like that new Minnesota coming. Do you want to see if I can get you a set of orders to that?
That'd be great. I'd love it.
We are talking pretty reverently about the, about that class submarine, and we've had Commander Fancher on the show, and the crew is pretty excited about it as well.
Yeah, they're beautiful machines, and of course, I just love submarining. So, but those are really impressive crafts.
Commander, I understand this is your second trip to Bahrain. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
What was the first trip?
The first trip, I was working with CTF 54, which is the submarine staff, basically the submarine operations staff. And what that means is we were managing the operation schedule for all of the submarines that come in and out of the Fifth Fleet AOR, which is basically the Indian Ocean, Persian Gulf, all the way up to the Suez Canal. And that's kind of like an air traffic controller, but for underwater submarines.
Yeah, it gets back to the Navy divides the world up by fleets. So that's the Fifth Fleet. So there's, you know, significant submariner or submarine, depending on how you pronounce that, activity in the area. So Commander Woodbury was involved with that.
Commander, we're just about out of time. You have any message for our listeners back here in Minnesota or your friends in St. Paul?
Just wanted to say hi, everybody. And I sure am jealous of the nice, cool weather you got there. It's starting to get up into the triple digits right now over here, and it's not coming back down for another 4 or 5 months. But I sure do miss it at home, and I can't wait to get back.
Commander, thanks for staying up late and calling in on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope the rest of your tour goes well.
Thank you, sir, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Captain, it was good to see you back in the studio again.
Thanks for having me again.
Now, I'm assuming you're back as the Navy Reserve Commander of the Navy Forces of Japan.
Yeah, I don't know what my job is when I wake up in the morning. Everything seems to work short fuse. So next week it's off to Yokosuka, but to work with my Japanese counterparts and my Navy counterparts over there. And then I think the summer is looking a little bit a little bit back to normal, back to being a drilling reservist.
There you go, sir. Well, we appreciate you coming back to the studio again. We'll look forward to seeing you sometime in the future.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Captain Richard Henderson and Lieutenant Commander Jason Woodbury on Minnesota Military Radio. In a moment, we'll be back with the Minnesota National Guard Strong Bonds Program. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about the Minnesota National Guard Strong Bonds Program. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
The Veteran Play Project is a play about, for, and with veterans. A play that tells Minnesota veterans' stories in their voices. The Veterans Play Project team is working with veterans on every step of the process, from writing the play, performing it, and everything in between. Currently, Veteran Play Project is working on the first draft of the play, which is based on stories gathered from over 100 veterans at dozens of story circles last year. This summer, the Veteran Play Project team would like to invite veterans to attend one of their workshops that will be held at the Mixed Blood Theater Wednesday nights from June 5th to July 24th. At these workshops, they will explore scenes for the new play gather veterans' feedback and creative input, and start to form the cast and crew that will present this play. The Veterans Play Project will be performed at Base Camp at Fort Snelling in November of this year. For more information, visit mixedblood.com.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining us now from the Minnesota National Guard is Chaplain Major Buddy Wynn. Chaplain, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good morning, Tom. Great to be here. Thanks.
Sir, the last time I saw you, it was at Camp Virginia over in Kuwait.
That's right. We were taking in a lot of dust and sand together, I think.
There was a little bit of that, but we had a great time over there and put on a good program with Colonel Kerska and told the story of the Red Bulls deploying half a world away.
That's right. 2,300 Minnesotans went and spent, time in the sand in Kuwait. Also had convoys that went up into Iraq and back, and we were there when the last troops left Iraq, and then we embarked on a very aggressive training program until we came home about a year ago in May of 2012.
And Chaplain, I found it interesting to know that there were chaplains deployed with the soldiers, but there were also chaplains back here that were helping the families.
Absolutely. It's a team effort, and we can't go forward into a deployed environment without knowing that we've got people back home taking care of our loved ones.
Chaplain, can you tell us how long you've been in the military?
Well, I enlisted back in 1988, and so it's been just over 25 years.
And you didn't start out as a chaplain, did you?
I didn't. I started out as a forward observer, a 13 Fox is what we call it in the Army, and spent some time on active duty. I spent a tour in Korea, did a tour up in the 10th Mountain Division at Fort Drum, New York, and then came back and continued on the path of an enlisted soldier till September 11th. And after that time, I entered the ministry and the chaplaincy, and I've deployed twice since then as a chaplain, and consider it a great honor to serve soldiers and their families.
And you were commissioned as a chaplain in 2003.
2003, I became a chaplain candidate. That's right. And in 06, I pinned the cross on, and it's been a great ride since that time.
So you're happy with that decision?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that's the path that the good Lord had for me, and so I'm going to continue to walk that out.
Chaplain, I'm curious, when you were deployed with the 1st Brigade Combat Team, do the soldiers make a regular point of coming to visit the chaplains? I know you have to serve all denominations and take care of all the soldiers.
We do. We ensure that all soldiers have access to worship in accordance with their tradition, and that's the responsibility of every chaplain. We also provide for the needs of our own denomination. And, people come to the chaplain for a lot of different reasons. And you like to think that it's because, you're a great preacher or you got some good counseling. But the reality is, and this is why we're there, they got challenges in their lives that if they could solve it on their own, they would. But they can't. So they come to you for input and advice and a listening ear. And, the best chaplains are the ones that are out with the troops. If you stay in the chapel, you're going to be a lonely chaplain. There's time that you need to be there, but it's also very important for chaplains to get out and be amongst the troops and their families.
And the soldiers need to be focused on the mission.
That's right.
And if they've got some issues and they're distracted, they're not going to do quite as well, are they?
That's right. And that's why we're here. We serve to provide input to our commanders to help them to put the best force forward.
Chaplain, the Minnesota National Guard, we've got about 14,000 soldiers and airmen. How many chaplains are in the chaplain's corps, and what does the full-time chaplain do?
We've got a couple of dozen chaplains in the Minnesota Air and Army National Guard, and my job as the full-time support chaplain is to provide support to all the things that they're going to be doing on the weekends. And so we facilitate the exercise of free religion. In addition to that, we've got a number of resources that we make available to soldiers and their families: strong bonds, marriage retreats, which we're going to talk about, suicide intervention officer training that chaplains provide support to. We've also got, as you know, soldiers and airmen coming and going constantly, heading out to the deployed theater, coming home from the deployed theater. That's the constant cycle that service members are in, and so chaplains are there every step of the way. We provide classes, teaching, and training to soldiers, airmen, and their families as it relates to deployment. And all phases of the deployment cycle, chaplains are there. So we're a busy bunch. There's no doubt about it.
We're speaking with Chaplain Buddy Wynn from the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Chaplain, we have soldiers and airmen coming and going all the time. And in Minnesota, we've got the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program. I assume that the chaplains are right there as part of that with the 30, 60, 90-day reintegration, and not only helping the soldiers and airmen come back, but helping the families get reintegrated with their service member coming back, because they've learned how to function without them, haven't they?
That's right. Chaplains are integrated, and they're a part of that entire process. Chaplains are there at those events, but they're also providing support to the family readiness groups, who are a key component of the deployment success effort. So chaplains are there to provide, you know, same thing we do to soldiers when we're deployed. Our presence has a lot to do with our job. Just being there can bring calm. Just being there can create an opportunity for a discussion. Just being present reminds people that commanders have put these resources in their area to help and to benefit them through the rigors of persistent conflict and how that affects families.
So our soldiers and airmen today, do they readily come see the chaplains and talk about issues? As opposed to 40 years ago, sometimes we didn't talk about things because we didn't want to get labeled anything.
Sure. I think the term stigma is used a lot these days. It's used when it comes to asking for help. It's used with suicide. It's used with any reaching out for support. And, you know, I'll tell you, this has been my experience, Tom. I think the Army tells you that you're 10 foot tall and bulletproof, and you need that to get out the door. You know, you're going to do a job that's very, very difficult. And so you can convince yourself of a lot of things. But when you come back from a kinetic environment, it's hard to convince yourself that you can ask for help and you can ask for support. This is something that the only reason I can continue to serve is because I've had people who I've observed who have been transparent enough and vulnerable enough as leaders to get up and to say, hey, friends, when I encountered a difficult situation, I had to ask for help. And because I did, the door was open for me to take the next step in my life. Because they were willing to do that, I've been able to ask for help when I needed it and to continue to send that message out to our soldiers, airmen, and their families.
So, Chaplain, what are some of the ways that you help build resilience in the force?
Well, chaplains do that by providing for the spiritual needs of soldiers. Primarily, that's our function and our job. We're there at our unit drills, so we're there integrated into the staff function. We're advising our commanders and their subordinate leaders as to how to best provide support to soldiers. This has to do with building resilience. Chaplains are not the primary instructors for resilience, but the Army categorizes kind of into five different pillars of resilience: social, emotional, family, physical, and spiritual. And we've got something to say about all five of those pillars, but primarily it's in the spiritual pillar. So being there, offering religious services, rites, sacraments, really it's our presence. We participate in the training, we participate in the staff process, and through that we create relationships that create opportunities for soldiers to come to us and get the support they need.
Chaplain, I've heard the term used, force multiplier. How does that apply to what you do to help the resilience of your soldiers and airmen?
Well, you know, I would say that, there's strength in numbers. And the more soldiers that we have that are resilient in those five pillars that I talked about, the better that our organization is going to do when we're called upon by our state and our nation to fulfill our mission. We do this on an individual basis. We can do it in a small group fashion through worship services or other spiritual type fitness events, or we do it in a big setting when we're briefing or we're teaching or we're training on any variety of topics, talking about values, talking about morals, ethics. Good commanders put their chaplains to work in those areas, and they see the great benefit of that.
Chaplain, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about your Strong Bond events to help our service members and their spouses build resilience. We're speaking with Chaplain Major Buddy Wynn on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we have been joined and been talking to Chaplain Major Buddy Wynn. Chaplain, we were about to talk about the Strong Bonds program for our Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen. Can you tell me what that is?
You bet. Strong Bonds is a chaplain-led program for commanders that really helps to build relationship resiliency. That's what Strong Bonds is all about. It was started in the Army back in 1999. And it was in the 25th Infantry Division in Hawaii. Creative chaplains there created an opportunity for married couples to get together and spend a weekend as essentially a marriage retreat. So that's expanded now, and we offer Strong Bonds relationship training in a variety of formats. We can do it in a four-hour block. We can take a whole day with single soldiers and married couples. And then we've got kind of the traditional Friday night to Sunday morning. It's a chance for couples to get together on that traditional weekend. It's also a chance for single soldiers, you know, to hear from what we believe is subject matter experts on topics like, you know, forgiveness and trust and having fun and effective communication and relationship, intimacy, how to navigate the unique challenges of the deployment. And, you know, really it's built around the concept. If you keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to keep getting what you've been getting. So if what you're doing isn't working, you got to try something different. What we've learned with Strong Bonds is that the overwhelming majority of participants have, at the end of the weekend or the end of the training, said, yep, we absolutely recommend Strong Bonds for those who haven't been through it. Then in doing this, we provide great support to our commanders we talked about earlier. This is another way that chaplains are our combat multiplier.
So, Chaplain, is this a program that was there before all of the, you know, in the last 10, 11 years, there have been multiple deployments, and some of your soldiers and airmen have gone 3, 4, 5 times. It's got to put stress on a marriage.
Absolutely, it does. And to answer the question, you know, it was there, but it wasn't used or deployed in kind of the means that it is now, which is very widespread. You know, the Army's done a much better job of funding it. In fact, there's been about a 5-year study. The Army was just wrapping that up here recently. But what they learned is that service members who participate in Strong Bonds marriage retreats see about a 50% lower divorce rate and much higher levels of satisfaction. And that points to personal readiness. Commanders in the Minnesota National Guard, one of our organizational priorities is to provide a competent, ready force. And if we got people who have got tools for their relationship issues, chaplains are helping to provide that competent, ready force because they can deal with the challenges that life brings them in their relationships.
So, Chaplain, do our couples go to the Strong Bonds retreats before they deploy, after they deploy, all of the above?
All of the above, yeah. In fact, we've expanded what we offer to create kind of a spouse's retreat while soldiers are deployed to give them an opportunity to, you know, to talk to chaplains and receive some training about how do you negotiate the distance? How do you negotiate the communications issues? How do you negotiate the issues with your kids now that half of the parenting team is out of the home? So, yeah, it's before, during, and after deployments.
So for the single spouses that come together with you, you're kind of a facilitator to share ideas and how they cope with the different problems at home.
That's right. And we do it in a kind of an emotionally safe environment. You know, we take them away to a very nice location. We partner with our Yellow Ribbon communities who provide support through, you know, maybe they'll do photography or they'll provide welcome baskets or centerpieces or offer discounts on, you know, date night, which is incorporated into those marriage retreat weekends. And most people come away very, very satisfied with their Strong Bonds experience.
So, Chaplain, we've got Minnesota National Guard service members all over the state. Do you move these around? And how do they find them? How do they sign up for them?
We do. Chaplains offer Strong Bonds, marriage retreats, and single soldier events at a variety of locations. Sometimes it's at Camp Ripley for 4 hours with the unit. We've been at Cragen's Resort in Brainerd. We've been at the Sofitel down in Bloomington. So we do move it around. And folks that want to sign up, service members can go through their chaplains. This is both the Army and the Air National Guard. Find your chaplain. Short of that, though, if they're listening now and they're online, they can go to BTYR, beyondtheyellowribbon.org, and just do a search for Strong Bonds, and they'll see the sign-up information and dates to come.
So, Chaplain, are these events well attended?
Very well attended. We have a very high participant rate. We offer child care, and I should add, Tom, that this entire thing is free. It doesn't cost the service member anything. The meals are covered. The lodging is covered. There's child care. Sunday morning, as an optional offering, we have a renewal of vows ceremony and a worship service led by chaplains as an optional means for couples to make a recommitment to their relationship. It's pretty cool.
Amazing. Why wouldn't they go?
That's the great question. We want to spread the word, so thanks for giving us that opportunity.
Chaplain, we've got about a minute left. Is there anything else you want to talk about as the full-time state chaplain?
Yeah, you know, Tom, we do focus on our soldiers and their family members, but very important to our success as an organization, the Minnesota National Guard, is the relationships we create with our communities. We've got over 60 communities that have National Guard service members in them, and so we're going to have a clergy training event that's going to be put on by the Veterans Administration, the VA. It's going to be at Camp Ripley on June 6th, and that's just one of the means by which we train the clergy throughout the state who have our soldiers. The other, you know, 365 days out of the year, they're only with us about 39. So we partner with those communities to provide for the unique needs of our service members and their families. And that's something that we'll continue to do and look forward to talking to you more about in the future.
So you actually bring in the civilian
you bet
clergy
we do. Yeah.
And talk to them about some of the issues that our soldiers and airmen may have.
Yeah, and we help to equip them to provide support to those unique needs.
Chaplain, we're just about out of time. I'd like to thank you for coming to see us on Minnesota Military Radio today, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
As do I, Tom. Thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it.
That was Chaplain Major Buddy Wynn on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
So, Sergeant Major, we're heading into the summer, finally. I think the snow's gone.
Yeah.
What does the Minnesota National Guard have going on now as the weather gets warmer?
You know, we have a lot going on. Most of our units are going to be doing their annual 2 weeks of training in the near future here. And a lot of those are going to be up at Camp Ripley training. It's an exciting time each year for our organization, as it really represents a time for a culmination of training that our soldiers and airmen have been doing all year at drill. It gives them the opportunity to progress from doing individual and squad-type training into a more collective or unit-level training event, so it's pretty exciting. Our service members are also going to get the opportunity to spend some quality time refamiliarizing themselves with things like their warrior skills, some weapons techniques, and leadership competencies. Of course, there are some concerns that naturally come along with these events as well.
Sergeant Major, I assume you're talking about safety-type concerns associated with military training.
Yeah, that's right, Tom. Aside from the obvious safety concerns from training itself, there are some less obvious issues we all have to keep our eyes on. Things like heat exhaustion and dehydration while our soldiers and airmen are training in the summer weather. Also, the fact that our service members train long hours. This type of fatigue can lead to like preventable accidents if we're not vigilant about safety. Even some things like the wildlife or the wood ticks can be significant issues when training in the field environment. And our leaders at all levels really have to be trained to monitor, identify, and mitigate each of these safety risks in our training events. And through the use of our comprehensive risk assessments conducted before each training event, you know, along with mitigations to lower the risk and some constant leader oversight, we have been able to maintain some really high safety records.
So, Sergeant Major, how do our soldiers and airmen prepare for annual training to ensure that they remain safe while they're participating in tough and demanding training?
You know, there's a couple of key factors here. The first is which they need to maintain a high level of physical fitness throughout the entire year. That way they ensure they're physically able to do what's being required of them at training and avoid injury. Next, we need to make sure that they're keeping responsible for ensuring they're maintaining hydration, nutrition, not only during their training but before and after their training as well. That's really key. The biggest issue is with hydration, making sure that they're drinking water. A lot of times our soldiers and airmen drink the sports drinks and sodas, and that can really dehydrate, so water is really an absolute necessity. And finally, they need to do the buddy checks, ensuring that your battle buddy or your wingman is doing okay, both physically, emotionally, everything. That's really the responsibility of every service member. We're only as strong as our weakest point, so we really need to be vigilant about soldier and airman care and training. They really are our greatest asset. I know that all of our service members are going to rise up to the challenges placed before them, whether at annual training this summer or in actual combat. We just have to ensure we're never going to take our eyes off safety. As our soldiers and airmen leave their training sites after annual training, they're going to be tired, and many have long drives back home. I urge everyone to take caution, to stay awake behind the wheel, pull over when you need to, and watch your buddy or your wingman. Together we can train and fight safely.
Sounds like some good thoughts and some good things to keep in mind to keep our soldiers and airmen happy and healthy this summer, Sergeant Major.
Absolutely, Tom.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Navy Captain Richard Henderson, Lieutenant Commander Jason Woodbury, Chaplain Major Buddy Wynn, Commissioner Larry Shelladoe of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.